these are IMC Krems International Business Students on Air.
Hello everyone and welcome to our podcast. The topic of this new episode is to discuss how COVID-19 disease has affected the role of women in the society. My name is Martina Balakova. I am here with my colleague Anna Lechner. We invited for this episode our guest Linda Totova, who works for the communications team of the Brussels Binder. Welcome, Linda.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Linda, could you please briefly explain what role do you have in the Brussels Binder and what is the main purpose?
So in the Brussels Binder, as you mentioned, I worked for the communications team within the Binder itself, which is a non-governmental organization. So the Brussels Binder in itself, it was officially launched in 2017 by an informal network of women from Brussels-based think tanks who saw the importance of greater women's participation in policy debates and in general in events and in discussion. So the actual rationale behind this is that if the institutions, organizations, and various other entities based in Brussels and beyond want to provide fresh perspectives on given topics and actually produce insightful and inclusive policies, the gender equality aspect needs to be considered. Today, the Brussels Binder's database of women experts serves as a free tool for organizations to find women experts for their own events and activities. So over the years, the Brussels Binder has received support from the EU institutions, NATO, and also various firms in the private sector.
Thank you very much for the introduction. And now I would let Anna introduce our today's topic.
Hey, everyone, and also welcome to our podcast from my side. I will give you a short introduction now to our discussion. So COVID-19 has turned the whole world around. The pandemic has affected the economic, health, and social sectors. The most impact it had is on women and their role at the workplace. The pandemic had brought new challenges to overcome as women were mostly employed in the lower paid sectors. As pandemic spread, also the governments were implementing several measures to battle this virus and protect its citizens, which led to occupational and educational disruption, as well as psychological disorders. By April 2020, up to 2.6 billion people worldwide were working at home or were in lockdowns, whereas women in hospitality were losing their jobs, especially those working as family caretakers or frontline workers were highly exposed to virus infections. Based on a statistic of 2019, of the World Health Organization, 70% of health workers are women, which makes it for them to be more likely to get an infection. Also, the COVID-19 points out the fact that many women have to manage two full-time jobs, one at home and one at work. This was an issue even before the crisis, whether there can be a certain work-life balance. The main work-life balance nowadays is the burden of fulfilling family responsibilities around the household and not having time for themselves. So, Martina, can you please provide here some more statistics on this statement?
Of course, I will provide what I have found out. So, according to the report on gender equality by the European Commission, 44% of Europeans agree that the most important role of women in the society is to take care of children and the household, which also represents a high number of about 33% of women taking a career break, for example, for at least 6 months. Women are lacking equal access to education, employment, or also equal working conditions, which leads to poverty. Women are less participating in the labor market due to few care facilities or because gender stereotypes or sexism prevails. Women are employed in less occupational jobs with lower wages, which affects quality and standards of living. Worldwide, women and girls are responsible for 75% of unpaid care, such as raising children, cleaning, shopping, or domestic management. According to the International Labour Organization, women perform on average 4 hours and 25 minutes of unpaid care work per day, which in comparison with men, it is only 1 hour and 23 minutes. The gender stereotypes in the labor market disproportionately limit women's professional and personal development, as said before. The pandemic measures implemented by the government to limit spread of the virus had an indirect impact on the economic sectors in which a high percent of women used to work. As said by Anna in the introduction, for example, these sectors are gastronomy, hospitality, retail, or domestic work. The employment gap is expected to increase by 5% of after the pandemic recession. So, for instance, when looking at the countries, women labor participation in Italy is one of the lowest in the EU of 56.5%, even prior to the pandemic. And due to the pandemic, Italy had experienced the she session, and there was a decrease to 47.5% during the second quarter of 2020. On the other hand, in France, the women labor participation was 68.2%, which is kind of an average in the EU 27 countries. And in the second quarter of 2020, this decreased to 62.5%. However, in comparison with Italy, France had fully recovered by the end of 2020, and women were not really experiencing any issues with entering back the labor force. According to Eurofound statistics on EU27, in 2019, more than 5% of workers were working at home. And in comparison to that, in 2020, over 12% of workers were working at home. So, Linda, what are the main challenges of teleworking and how will the future working conditions change in the EU?
I think it's really interesting what you mentioned, how actually the statistics keep changing as we approach yet another wave of COVID, and we see that the rate of vaccinations is actually very, very different across the member states. I think, and it is very likely that the actual number at the end of 2021 might be even higher. And the rate as to how women are affected in terms of their employment might actually be very different at the end of the pandemic itself. So I think it's best to start with some basic information here to set the context. So, for example, according to the Massachusetts Institute for Technology, that published a study last summer, so a few months after the actual pandemic outbreak, it was around 50% of those who were employed were carrying on working remotely. However, working from home, as opposed to some expectations, did not really emerge as an equalizer for women. Since the pandemic actually started, McKinsey estimated that women's jobs have been on average 1.8% more at risk than those of a man. And this especially applies to part-time workers, of course, disabled people, but also employees of small and medium businesses and enterprises. So I would maybe mention four main challenges that women have been struggling with, but of course these may very much depend on the country and on very specific financial situation at home. But first, I would say that, as you mentioned yourself quite correctly, is that women on average spend more time homeschooling and doing work around house and generally experience less flexibility and freedom to work than their husbands, in order to actually buffer the sudden loss of childcare in case they actually already have a family. So while people in general had to suddenly balance out three completely separate aspects of their life, so work, home, and school, women were found more at risk at sacrificing one over the other when trying to balance them out during the pandemic. Second, while we are also yet to learn about the psychological consequences of the pandemic, the Eurofound study actually says that while workers are more likely to spend their free time working, which in itself might have long-term mental repercussions that we don't yet know about, women spend as much as 25% of their free time doing tasks associated with their employment when they telework, compared to only 19% of men. And this is even 35% for women that already have children. So again, this does not only decrease the efficiency of their work during teleworking hours, but it also impacts on their free life when they are not supposed to work. Third is that remote work does not allow for the actual network that many women need in order to climb up the career ladder in their specific profession. So women in general are more hesitant to, well, when it comes to self-promotion and putting themselves out there in order to get a promotion. So teleworking has further shrunk the opportunities for women to get there. We might actually see at some point, once the vaccination rate increases, that company urges some employees to stay at home while others will be allowed to enter the premises and even go on business trips. But here we might yet again see a gender imbalance when it comes to who is allowed to stay at home and who isn't. So women may not be a part of these informal decision-making structures to begin with, depending on the sector. As you just mentioned, we see a great gender equality in different sectors and in different professions that was already before the pandemic. And last but not least, spending more time at home working actually increases the possibility of women facing domestic violence or abuse in general. So overall, while 83% of men think that teleworking has a positive effect on work-life balance, actually, only 74% of women agree with the statement, again, likely associated with the care responsibilities. That said, it is important to point out that women have also benefited from the pandemic in quite unexpected ways. So the pandemic accelerated the technological evolution and almost forced workers, both men and women, to acquire tech skills very fast so that they can make use of remote work, and in many cases also in order for them to keep their employment. So since women, even before the pandemic, were often struggling with not being able to attend different events and other activities due to other obligations, COVID actually made it a bit easier for them precisely because of technology.
Okay, thank you for your sharing your experience and thoughts on that. Let's move on to an also very important aspect, namely gender equality strategy. I will provide here some facts as well as mention some EU programs that have been implemented. So in March 2020, the European Commission had introduced a gender equality strategy 2020 to 2025. This strategy was delivered by EU President von der Leyen as response to a commitment to a union of equality. This strategy should increase gender equality in Europe in 5 years and should focus on decreasing violence, avoiding stereotypes, advanced gender equal economy, gender mainstreaming, and promoting gender equality as well as women's empowerment worldwide. As the first year of implementing this strategy was affected by COVID-19 crisis, the Commission put into force many efforts to make this strategy achievable. To battle violence, which had increased due to lockdowns and other measures, the Commission had established its first EU Victims' Rights Strategy in June 2020, followed by open public consultation on a new legislative initiative in February 2021. The EU Victims' Rights should support victims and prosecute perpetrators of gender-based violence. In December 2020, the Commission pointed out the issue of online violence with its proposal to adjust the Digital Services Act to identify the responsibilities of online platforms. Domestic violence was increasing, and this forced nations to act. For example, France adopted a strategy to address this matter by establishing a code for word for victims to signal pharmacy staff to contact help and provide safe space. Furthermore, Slovenia provided a 24/7 telephone helpline for victims by expanding the size of emergency services to provide counseling on relationship or therapy for young people, female prisoners, or employees. Our question here to you, Linda, is the following. The European Commission had introduced many measures on how to battle violence during the pandemic. What would be a good instrument to end gender-based violence?
First of all, well, thank you for the question. First of all, I would like to say that it's very good to see that you connected women and employment with the topic of gender-based violence. I mean, the topics themselves increase in popularity and more attention has been paid to the topic of gender-based violence, but actually very few people connected to the fact that it may actually influence the extent to which women participate in the labor market. So I think that that is really, really good. So there definitely isn't a one-size-fits-all. This rise of domestic violence has increased everywhere across the continent and even beyond that. It may be a result of increased consumption of alcohol and other drugs to increase one's performance during long-term hours of teleworking. Also, if one experiences a lower work performance, this may lead to increased aggression towards one's partner. A prolonged period of isolation and frustration might impact on behavioral patterns as well. So women and men are also facing more difficult circumstances, not allowing them to leave their abusive partners once the violence at home actually breaks out. So 1 in 3 women in Europe are affected by physical or sexual violence, and 1 in 2 women, so 50%, in the EU have experienced sexual harassment since the age of 15, which is a terrible number, bearing, then again, enormous physical and psychological consequences for the rest of their lives. But if violence against women and girls does not just bring harm to individuals, it has a heavy cost for the whole society. So according to the most recent estimates of the European Institute for Gender Equality, the economic cost for violence against women and girls in the EU amounts to 189 billion euros per year, which is a crazy number. The UN estimates that violence has increased under COVID by around 20%. And this is on top of 55% of women already in the EU having previously experienced sexual harassment. But what you said, that these statistics force nations to implement new reforms, unfortunately, we don't really see a constant there, because the topic being much more pronounced, for example, in some Western European countries than it is in Eastern European countries. But we have some concrete examples as to how states push through different directives and legislations to combat gender-based violence that is mainly statistically speaking against women. So in France, like you mentioned, domestic violence jumped by as much as 30%. Some member states have passed legislation in response to this domestic violence. So in Latvia and Slovakia, the parliament passed a legislation that obliges governments to provide women facing violence at home, I mean those who can support such claims, with an alternative form of accommodation. Spain and Lithuania, for example, to also give an example of Western European countries and a Baltic state, both have strengthened coordination between its health, police, and justice services, so that women are more likely to find help and that everything is more interconnected. But what we are talking about here as to what is the good instrument is financial support and making it easier for women to get help once they're actually courageous and brave enough to inform the respective services of the abuse happening at home. So, as you mentioned, the Commission published the gender equality strategy that it publishes every year. And it actually calls on states to not only collect some reliable data on the cases, but also support public services in preventing gender-based violence with financial support. On December 2021, so actually in a month since we are recording this on the 10th of November, the Commission is expected to put forward its proposal for an EU directive that is supposed to mention very specifically all forms of gender-based violence and ways to tackle them. And only a few days ago, more than 40 members of the European Parliament actually called on the Commission to address this, precisely because of seeing how COVID has affected the gender-based violence and the rates. But of course, because of COVID, this has not received the sufficient support. And under lockdown, the circumstances made women much more of vulnerable, and now it is very much up to decision makers, not only on the EU level, but also in member states, to figure out what to do next.
Thank you, Linda, for this interesting topic. I think we could talk about it the whole night, actually. And also the instruments are very important to mention it, because I think it will be an ongoing topic on how to protect women and just reduce the violence, not only in the European Union, but also worldwide. now moving back to what Commission is doing with our strategy, even though the EU principle is to have a right to equal pay for equal work, women still earn less on average, and pay discrimination has become more of a challenge due to COVID-19. The European Commission has threatened its proposal for a directive to increase pay transparency, which I think is really important to say, and enforce mechanism in March 2021. At the same time, the Commission presented an action plan to implement the European Pillar of Social Rights to support women in the labor market and make gender equality a core principle in Europe, which I think this also applies on how to resolve domestic violence. In October 2020, the Commission extended its proposal for a directive to set an adequate minimum wage in the EU, which should also indirectly decrease the gender pay and pension gap, as most women are minimum wage earners, as we discussed at the beginning, that women work in more lower paid sectors. According to Eurostat, the gender pay gap is on average 14.1%. For example, Estonia is experiencing the highest pay gap of 21.7%, and Luxembourg, on the other hand, is experiencing the lowest 1.3%. The minimum wage policy, as Commission proposed, should reduce the gender pay gap. It should also improve working and living conditions, also the quality of living, and ensure sustainable and inclusive economic recovery. So in the end, Linda, do you think COVID-19 has brought more attention to women's position in the society in comparison, for example, to the last decade?
I mean, yes and no. I think that we can talk about the role of women in society, but also as you sort of put it in the context of women's employment and how that changed. But again, it's yes and no. So we have witnessed a greater presence of the topic of women's rights and women's participation in the labor market and female empowerment in general in the recent years. And it's the combination of the Me Too movement and Time's Up in the US. It is also various other initiatives such as the Brussels Binder, but also Security, that was established by Hannah Neumann, a member of the European Parliament, but also many, many others that are currently being established and launched in Europe, and especially in the EU member states. And these all serve as a reminder that there is more work to be done to achieve true gender equality. So yes, more attention has been paid to female employment and the role of women in societies. And but this presence of the topic has already started way before the pandemic. On the other hand, what we have observed over the course of the past 2 or 3 years, actually we have seen a surge in the traditional conservatism, primarily in Central and Eastern European countries, but we also see it in some Western European countries, which goes directly against greater freedom for women. And the recent abortion law in Poland is actually only one of many examples of this phenomenon that might actually also then influence women's role not only in the society based on the freedom that they are allowed to have, but also in their employment.
Okay, thank you very much. Unfortunately, we already have to come to the conclusion. So the COVID-19 is still affecting our lives. And as we can see, dealing with gender equality, it is still an ongoing process. The European institutions are drafting and implementing new strategies on how to overcome this issue, and further challenges will lead to more discussions. So a very, very last question here is, so did COVID-19 really result in a step back for women?
The short answer is yes. So according to the World Economic Forum, before the pandemic, they already estimated that it would take women 99.5 years to bridge gender imparity between men and women. And that also includes pay gap, like Martina mentioned, but also other sectors. In 2021, so in full-blown pandemic, we see that it may take more than 135 years. So the estimate has rapidly increased only during the pandemic. And this was especially so in the areas of political empowerment and economic participation. The acceleration of digitalization might have made some women workers even more vulnerable if technical skills are suddenly required. So a short answer is yes, it was a step back.
All right. So I would like to thank you, Linda, as our guest for this professional and very achievable insight. And we would love if you also join one of our next sessions of IMC students.